You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books.
McDonald's deal drop has landed. Push the button every Monday and bag yourself three epic deals, like 20% off the whole menu. Save £3 when you spend £15, and a deal just for you, like a 1.49 Big Mac. Oh, look, I just got 99p nugs. Deal drop. Three epic deals every Monday, available all week on the McDonald's app. 18 plus, app only. Offers Monday to Sunday until the 26th of Jan. One-time use. Offers vary. Participating restaurants only. T's and C's apply.
Hi, listeners. We are so excited to be here today. Kim and I are here with what you need to know going into Onyx Storm. So this is not a theories episode. We are not here to chit-chat about all of our deep dives and all of our unhinged theories. If you want to hear those, please head to our previous two episodes leading into this. We have two wonderful theories episodes covering all of the Imperium, one special episode with fantasy fangirls.
That's right!
Which was such a blast to do. So this is really going to focus on the facts of the first two books, what we think is going to be important going into Onyx Storm. So this is like basically one big world building history magic system
lesson.
This is the big lesson. So if you didn't do a reread and you really feel like you just kind of like want to quickly speed through it, we are your girls. We're here.
Yeah.
So consider this your spoiler warning for the entire Imperium series by Rebecca Yarros, Fourth Wing and Iron Flame. But before we dive in, Kim, can you give us some shout outs for our patrons?
I would love to. So if you guys are not familiar, one of the many amazing, if we do say so ourselves, benefits of being our tier two patron is that you get a shout out in one of our episodes. So today we are going to be shouting out Nicole Martin Kinney, Anja, and Lynn Reed. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. Truly, we genuinely wouldn't be able to continue doing this without you guys. And it's just such a dream that we get to do this for our job.
It really, truly is. Yes.
Thank you guys so much. Okay. Let's dive in.
All right. So we are going to kick off with a history lesson with Anna, you know.
Of course.
As we do.
Got to do it.
Okay. So quickly, we're going to run through the world building and kind of some of the major places that are mentioned in the first two books. So the two known kingdoms in this world are Navarre and Peromiel. Okay. Those are the two ones that we know of right now.
Right.
So Navarre is ruled by King Tori. It is made up of six provinces, but the two main ones that like are mentioned the most are Moraine, which is where Biscayeth War College is located, and Tirindor. Now, Tirindor, this is the stronghold for the Tirish Rebellion. Remember, the Tirish Rebellion is what happened. That's what Zen Ryerson's father was a part of, and all of the marked ones, all the kids with the relic tattoos. Obviously, Fen Ryerson is dead, which makes Zayden the heir to, it's like a dukedom? I don't know.
It's like a ducal seat, basically, if we're going back to our historical romances, I believe that's what it's called.
It is.
Duke Ryerson.
Duke Ryerson. Duchess Violet. That's very historical romance.
Very historical. I love that for her.
Okay, so the main city in Tirindor is Aredia. This is where a lot of events take place in Iron Flame. So a couple things on Aredia. It's the easternmost city in Tirindor and borders very closely to Peromiel. Remember, Peromiel is the other big known kingdom that's kind of in the first book what we think of as the rival kingdom to Navarre. It has a natural barrier called the Cliffs of Drowler. This is, if you remember in Iron Flame, when the griffins try to access Navarre, they have to climb over the cliffs because they can't fly because of high altitudes.
Right.
Historically, this is important. Historically, the valley directly above Aredia was the hatching grounds for a breed of black dragons. Now, in Iron Flame, as dragons and their hatchlings relocate from the Vale, it begins to have that purpose again. So when this happens, there's a lot more magic that's restored to the area. It basically is like restructuring the existing magic that's there. Mm. What that means, what the implications are, were kind of unclear at this point. But it seems important, like why else would Rebecca put that in there, that this used to be this ancient hatching ground and
right.
Now all of these dragons are coming back and it's kind of having that purpose again and it hasn't in centuries. So
yeah,
it's just interesting.
Right.
One more thing about the valley. The magic gives off a thermal type of energy that naturally heats the valley. So although it's like very cold and snowy in the surrounding areas, the valley itself is warm. And I think you can kind of remember that when they take their runes classes and some of their magic classes, when a lot of them relocate to Aredia, they're like actually kind of like taking off their layers because it's like hot.
So hot. It's so hot. But it's like freezing everywhere else outside.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So moving on to our second known kingdom in this world, Peromiel. This is ruled by Queen Maria. We have not met her. We've only heard of her. I would be surprised if she isn't on paper in the next book. I think she's probably going to be important. I mean, she is the ruler.
Yeah.
Okay, so here in Peromiel, instead of dragons, they ride griffins. They're half eagle, half lion, but they channel to their bonded riders, similarly how dragons channel to their bonded riders, but it's not as much magic. The magic isn't as strong.
Right.
This is interesting, though. We know that a rider without its dragon is dead in Navarre.
Yep.
But in Peromiel, a griffin without its rider is dead.
she just swapped it.
She's like, she's too emotionally attached. And
yeah, exactly.
They're like, well, I can't survive now.
Yeah. But
another important place in Peromiel is Cliffsbane Academy. This is the equivalent to Biscayeth for griffin flyers. Okay. This is where people go to train to become griffin flyers. The only upside, I mean, not the only upside, but it sounds like a much more lovely, chill place.
Much more chill.
A lot less death.
Yeah, less death. Probably still some death, but much less than Biscayeth.
Much which less.
Let's just be honest. We wouldn't last at Biscayeth. And I think we could have a real fighting chance at Cliffsbane.
We could have a real fighting chance.
I think so.
Yeah. So here, they have something very similar to threshing at Cliffsbane. It's called Harvest, where they jump off a cliff and have to land on the back of a griffin. But see, like, in threshing, a dragon would just let you fall and you would die. Like, that's it, right?
Yep.
But at Cliffsbane, if you don't land on a griffin, you just fall into water and then you just swim ashore and choose a different major.
Yep.
And I remember when they're explaining this to Violet, she's like, wait, I'm sorry, you just swim ashore? Like, you... What do you mean?
What do you mean? You don't die?
Death, and they're like, death isn't the only other option.
They were literally like, what is wrong with you? No, we don't die. And everyone at Biscayeth is like, oh, wow.
Well, you guys are soft.
Yeah, soft. What wimps. Like, y'all are insane, which fair.
Okay, so something important to note about Cliffsbane Academy, it was attacked and destroyed in Iron Flame by the Venon. So Brennan, who is Violet's older brother, if we remember, Brennan makes a deal with Viscount Tacaris. Now, Viscount Tacaris, he kind of reigns over a province of Peromiel. We meet him. He's Kat's uncle. Mm-hmm. He's not a bad dude per se. He's not nice, but he's like probably more selfishly motivated than anything.
Sure.
Okay, so when Cliffsbane Academy is destroyed by the Venon, Viscount Tacaris makes a deal with Brennan that all of the flyers at Cliffsbane Academy can seek haven in Aredia. But in return, what Brennan asks for is that Viscount Tacaris has to give him the Luminary. Now, the Luminary is important. It is very necessary in Iron Flame because it's what they need to use to light the ward, to help like extend protection. And this is a huge part of Iron Flame. They're trying to get this Luminary from Viscount Tacaris.
Yes, and because Aredia doesn't have wards. And
yes.
So that's the big concern, is that they need their own wardstone like Biscayeth has. And if they don't have it, then they are very, very vulnerable to attacks from Venon.
Exactly, yes. Okay, so moving on, the last place I want to talk about is the Isle Kingdoms. We don't know a lot about them, except that we know that they were allies with the first six during the Great War. But after the Tirish Uprising in Navarre, Navarre banned trading with the Isle Kingdoms. And Navarre citizens themselves are not welcome in the Isle Kingdoms. I'm interested to know if Navarre put that ban or if the Isle Kingdoms was like, no, you're not welcome here.
Right. And like, why did they ban trading with them?
Oh, I think Navarre banned trading with them because I think Isle Kingdoms was probably like, we're not keeping the venom a secret. And also, we think that might be where the seventh breed of dragons live.
Exactly. I'm so interested to find out more. I mean, I think we're definitely going to the Isle Kingdoms.
We have to. Okay, so that's why I'm bringing them up. So this is why I think they're important. They are historically listed as allies with Navarre during the Great War, okay? On the jacket cover of Onyx Storm, when she released that blurb, it states that Violet is going to have to journey to seek out new allies, which we're inferring means the Isle Kingdoms, because that is constantly how the Isle Kingdoms is referred to in both books, as allies during the Great War.
Absolutely.
And I think this is like going around everywhere, but like that if Andarna, well, Andarna is a seventh breed of dragon, where are the rest of her breed?
Yeah.
There's got to be more. I mean,
absolutely.
That's where we think they might be hiding out.
Definitely.
Okay, one more history aspect, the Great War. Mm-hmm. The Great War was 633-ish years before the start of Fourth Wing. The first dragon riders, or as they're called throughout the series, the first six, like we said, allied with the Isle Kingdoms to fight against General Daramore and his army of Venom. Not a lot is known about Daramore except that his army is responsible for draining the nutrients from the land now known as the Barrens. More on that later. Also important to note that griffins and dragons fought on the same side during this war.
Yeah.
So we weren't always enemies. I mean, well, and we're not. At the end of Iron Flame, the griffins and the dragons are all working together again.
Absolutely.
As we should be.
As we should be. This is, what is it, Anna? It's war times.
It's war times, Kim. Okay, so speaking of war times, the war ended. The Great War ended, and this is when we have the unification of Navarre. So what this means is basically after the Great War, they decided to blend all of these multiple provinces together to create new Navarre. Now, Biscayeth is created at the same time, and this is where they put the Wardstone up, okay? It's put up near the Vale because that's, again, the main hatching grounds. It protects the dragons, the hatchlings, and then the wards extend out. It's also important to note that after unification, Navarre cut itself off from the rest of the world. Like we said, that's why we don't communicate with Peromiel. We don't communicate with the Isle Kingdoms. And not only did they unify the provinces, but they also unified the cultures, which is important when we discuss the diaries later. Warwick and Lyra's diary were written in different languages that are non-existent anymore. And you have to be able to read this lost language in order to be able to decipher what the diary means. And I think Navarre is doing is basically creating a culture of control. Because we know that in Peromiel that a lot of these things are not lost. And we have no idea what's going on in the Isle Kingdoms, but I can only assume.
I hope we find out.
Okay, so we are about to move on to the magic system. I'm so excited for Kim to walk us through this.
Yes.
But before we do, I just want to make a quick mention that, yes, obviously, normally when we do our What You Need to Know episodes, we walk you through all of the major players in the game, all the characters. We started to write out a list, and guys, it was lengthy.
It's lengthy.
It's lengthy, and also it was just kind of boring for us to rattle off all of these characters, their signets, their dragons. So what we did was we created basically a master list, and it is up for free on our Patreon for everybody. You do not have to be a paid member. You can just go there. You can see it. We've got every character, their dragon, their signet, if they're a griffin flyer, if they're working for Navarre, if they're a member of the Inner Circle. So
yep.
Head that way. And it's for free on our Patreon. If you're not a member of our Patreon, though, consider joining.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? Because we have so much fun bonus content.
Yes, so much fun bonus content and so much to come with Onyx Storm. It is going to be an extravaganza over on our Patreon.
Our chapter chats are by far like our biggest hit over there whenever a new book is released.
Absolutely. You'll be getting those and just some really fun stuff coming in 2025. So that link will be in our show notes. So just head to the caption or the show notes for this episode and you will be able to click that link and it'll take you straight to the post like Anna said.
Yes. And so Kim, will you lead us into the magic system?
I would love to. Okay, so let's chat about the magic system in the Empyrean series. There are three main sources of magic: dragons, griffins, and quote unquote the source, also referred to as the ground or the earth, which is how you become Venon. So we're going to break these three down for you. Like Anna said, of course, there are dragons and griffins in this world, and the dragons and their riders have a really unique bond. Dragons actually channel their magic through their bonded rider, enabling the rider to use lesser magic and their unique signet. Signets result from the bond between dragon and rider and are very unique to each rider. The feel of a dragon's magic is very different. So for example, Tarn's power feels like a blazing molten stream, whereas Violet notes Andarna's feels like a pearlescent flow.
Of course it does.
Of course it does. Of course, dragons can communicate telepathically with their rider, and it creates a really fun group chat scenario when mated dragons bond, because we know Taryn and Segale are mated dragons, and they have a special bond which bleeds into their riders.
I love the group chat.
Yep. And we know that that is why Zayden and Violet can speak mind to mind when their shields are down, because Taryn and Segale are bonded. So let's go over signet control and limitations. So a rider's control determines the strength and the power of their signet, and over-channeling magic can cause burnout, which risks the rider's life. And if you bond to a juvenile or a feathertail dragon, burnout consequences actually reverse, which risks the dragon's life instead.
Aww.
And of course, we saw this with sweet Andarna at the end of Fourth Wing. She stopped time to save Violet and the crew, and therefore was put into the dreamless sleep early because it was so exhausting and she almost burned out trying to save them. Sweet Andarna. But speaking of burnout, we saw signs of burnout with Zayden at the Battle of Biscayeth, and it also happened to Violet when Varish is punishing her for not bringing Andarna to their lessons in Iron Flame.
Good riddance.
The worst.
Yeah, worse than Jack.
Yeah, Jack infuriates me for a whole different reason than Varish. It's two separate things.
Varish is a really, really bad dude. And Jack is a bad dude too, but Jack is just like, just go away. He's the cockroach.
Go away, for the love of God. Just don't get us started on it. Okay, so signs of burnout are trembling, fever, fatigue, and red skin, kind of similar to a sunburn. Now, second signets, the most talked about topic in the Empyrean fandom. So we know that second signets are achieved two ways. One is familial bonding, which is when a dragon bonds with a rider from its previous rider's direct family line. Apparently, the risks include the rider being driven to madness.
Yeah.
So they say. I have questions about this.
I think they're wrong. I think that's Navarre being like, we don't want you to have two signets, so don't bond. You'll go crazy. But we'll see.
And yes, like Anna said, this practice is frowned upon and actually punishable by the Empyrean. But some dragons actually bond with distant relatives to create more powerful but similar signets.
Yep.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And then, of course, the other type of second signet is achieved through dual dragon bonding, which we know because Violet bonded two different dragons. So she will have a signet from Taryn, which we know is actually pure power, but currently she is wielding it as lightning. We will see what happens with that. And then we do not know at this stage what her second signet is through Andarna. It's been quite the topic of conversation. Okay, let's move on to relics. So relics are marks very similar to a tattoo, and they are given by a dragon. And there are two types. We know that there are rebellion relics, which are a result of a specific rune which protected the children of the rebellion during their parents' execution after the Tirish Rebellion failed. Because it was General Melgrin's dragon that carried out the execution, that's why the relics of the marked ones, as they're called, counteract his signet, which we know his signet is to see the outcomes of battles. However, A fun little loophole is that because of that, when three or more marked ones are gathered, General Melgren cannot see the outcome of that situation or battle.
What?
How convenient. And then we also know that, of course, there are dragon relics, which are given to a rider by their dragon after threshing. Now, we also have, of course, griffins, and they also channel magic to their flyers, but a flyer does not receive a signet. However, the griffin can give gifts, which usually have to do with mind work. Like our friend Kitty Cat can heighten someone's emotions, for example, and we saw that during the scene with her and Violet.
Oh boy, did we.
It was intense. And griffins can communicate telepathically with their riders, other griffins, and actually dragons, which I thought was really interesting.
Yes.
And last thing about the griffins is that all humans bonded to griffins or dragons have what's called lesser magic. So like unlocking doors, powering, you know, pens, manipulating mage lights, sound shields, and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And then you develop your signet if you have a dragon. Now, the last magic source, which is just called the source, or ground, earth, all of these three terms are kind of interchangeable. And we know that channeling from the source, you can draw magic from the ground or earth if you don't have a dragon. Unfortunately, it does turn you into a venom. So
unfortunately,
I wouldn't recommend it. And Anna brought up a really interesting point in the Fantasy Fangirls Onyx Storm Theories episode that you guys should go listen to about potentially not all venom being evil.
I stand by that. I think it's a more interesting writing choice if they're not actually all evil.
Absolutely. I think it depends on why you channel, what your reasoning for channeling is.
Exactly. Yes. What is the reason he channeled for love?
I'm hoping that that matters.
Through love, all is possible.
Through love, all is possible. That's right. So there is, of course, a cost of channeling, as there always is. And that is part of the human soul. The more power taken, the more soul is lost. Now, Rebecca did confirm that Zayden did give up part of his soul. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but she did say it's not a question of if he did. It's a matter of how much of his soul did he give up and if he's going to have to give more.
Don't love that.
Rebecca?
Don't love that.
That's terrifying. Okay, Anna, what is next?
Okay, so now that we've run through the basic power structure and the magic system, we're going to break down some of the magical elements, for lack of a better term, in this world. First, we're going to discuss alloy. So alloy is basically, in this world, like a metal amalgamation, which an amalgamation is basically a combination of various metals put together. And it doesn't actually hold innate magic itself, like the alloy, but it can be imbued with magic. So it's essentially a vessel for carrying the magic. And a great example of this would be ward stones, which hold the magic, right? And then project it out to like protect Navarre.
Right.
So alloy is actually one of the main materials used in weapons that help to stop venom. Okay. Example, the ward stones, right? Also, alloy daggers. This is one of the only things that we know of that can kill a venom.
Yes.
There is a second weapon. What that is yet, it's been hinted, but we don't know what it is.
We will see. We will see.
We will see. We will see. Also, the more alloy is used, the stronger the magic is, okay?
Yeah.
So examples of how alloys are used across the book so far are, like we said, in Navarre, they have the ward stones, but also they are used under armories and like outposts outside far away from Biscayeth, because Biscayeth is where the main ward stone is. So they kind of put alloy like underneath various like armories and outposts to help strengthen the wards.
Yeah.
And then again, like we said, in the Revolution, alloyed weapons are what like Zayden and his buddies are all working to send over the Paromish border to help fight the venom. Here are a few things that are required to create an alloy. You have to have a forge, dragon fire, which we know is obviously very important at the end of Iron Flame, a crucible, which is basically a container that's able to withstand extreme heat. You put all the metals in there and it's used to like melt everything together. A luminary, which is the big thing that Brennan negotiates when the Cliffsbane flyers come to Aredia. And the luminary basically intensifies the dragon's already extreme flame to like make it hot enough to melt the alloy into whatever it is that they need. Now, there are only two known luminaries in existence. One is at Biscayeth, but that's why Brennan needs the one from Viscount Dakaris in Iron Flame, because they can't just go like knock on Biscayeth's door and be like, hey, can we borrow your luminary to ward up the rebellion?
Yeah. Lord? I just don't think that's going
to
go well.
Also, this was interesting to note in my reread. So there's a lot of different ores that are used, like metals to make, you know, the alloys. But dragon eggshells were one of the things that are used. And I forgot that dragon eggshells are made of metal.
Yes. Say, I totally forgot that, which is wild.
And I mean, I guess it's a very hard protective shell.
Yeah. But like, ouch for giving birth. Like, ugh, yeah. It's painful. It's metal.
Like, it's metal.
How does that, you know what? I'm not going to question.
We're not going to think about that anatomy question right now. That's a little too biology, science-y.
I don't do science. So
Kim doesn't do science. So, but what's interesting to note about the dragon eggshells is that even after a dragon hatches, the eggshell retains magic for like an extended period of time. Now, I don't think that there's a specific time listed, but it's long enough that they're able to utilize whatever magic's in the eggshells into alloys, into things to make like wardstones.
Right. So interesting.
Speaking of wards and wardstones, what are wards? Well, if you haven't guessed it already, it's basically an invisible shield powered by magic, okay? So how are the wards created? Through a ward stone. These are basically large pillars. Like we said, Beskaith has one and Aredia has one. They are carved with intricate runes. It's important to note, well, I don't know if it's important, but it's interesting rather, that the runes that are engraved on the ward stone in Beskaith are very different than the runes that are engraved at the one in Aredia. Violet makes note of it. So if Violet's making note of it, I don't know if that's going to be important later, listeners.
But probably noted for a reason.
Yes, exactly. So also important to note that we have to use dragonfire from all 7 species to get these wards up and running. How do you know that a wardstone is working properly? Apparently there's a black flame coming out the top, which that's actually the big clue that Violet has in Iron Flame. Because when she gets the Aredia wards up, they only use 6 dragons because they have the wrong journal.
That's right.
And the fire flame on top of the wardstone was not black.
Mm.
And they're like, well, this doesn't look right.
This looks off a little bit.
Okay. So we're going to move on to runes. Now, listeners, this was brand new to us in Iron Flame. And I'm going to be honest, it was a little cumbersome to work through.
Mm-hmm. It's very abstract.
Yes, that's a good word for it.
I felt like it was very confusing, which should surprise nobody because it's kind of science adjacent. And the first time I read it, it was so distracting to me that it kind of took me out of the story.
Yeah.
Then upon reread, I kind of just let it go more. And I was like, sure. But Anna really breaks it down in a way that I feel like makes it very palatable to everybody.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
So the runes, again, the reason why we learn about it in Iron Flame and the reason why it's not taught at Beskaith is because it originates from Tirish culture. And you have to remember that after the unification of Navarre, a lot of the cultures were purposely buried, gotten rid of, okay?
Yeah.
So what are runes? Runes, they're basically like a logosyllabic language. Oh, what does that mean? Think of it as basically like the Chinese written language or Mayan glyphs. They are symbols that represent words. In the case of these runes, they're like geometric patterns. So rather than looking at various letters to make a word, you're using symbols to create a word. And each shape, each geometric pattern has a different meaning. So what are runes? Runes are strands of magic woven into a geometric pattern for a specific purpose. So it's like, I'm picturing like dental floss. But like really beautiful.
Yes. Like sparkly dental floss.
Sparkling threads of magic.
Yes.
What is it? You know, like, is it in Harry Potter when they do the...
yes, when they pull the memories to put in the pensive.
The pensive.
Yes, Dumbledore.
That's kind of how I think of it. Yes. I think of it as like strings of magic. Yes. But instead of coming from my brain, it's being channeled from your dragon or from your griffin, whatever. So you have to channel directly from your source. And the closer you are to your source, the easier it is to control that rune, like the creation of that rune, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there was 2 things about the runes, I think, that we found the most confusing. And it was these 2 words, the use of tempering versus the use of imbuing. So the process of like embedding magic into an object is called tempering. So when you are creating a rune, you're tempering the rune. That's what tempering is. You're creating the rune itself, okay? There is a difference. When you are imbuing something, you're literally just taking your magic, your magical force, and putting it inside something. You're not picking strands. You're not trying to create something with a very specific purpose. For example, tempering a heating rune, you're pulling a weave of magic, a strand, a thread, and you're tempering it into a specific pattern to then its only purpose is to heat something.
Right.
Whereas imbuing something, you are just putting a bunch of magic, I wouldn't say willy-nilly, but it's not specific.
Yeah.
It is just throwing magic into an object, which we see at the end with the ward stones. And Lilith, she is literally putting her life force. She is imbuing the ward stone with power. But it's not a specific power. It's just all magic going in.
Right.
Okay. So runes also tend to be activated when they're triggered to perform their function. So the biggest example is Zayden gives Violet a runed dagger to counteract Catriona's emotional heightening magic. Also important to note that the amount of power you put into the rune has to be very specific. If you put too much power into like a healing rune, it could just catch on fire.
Right.
So that's, again, being close to your source is important when channeling. And Violet actually says that she finds it easier to channel from Andarna because Andarna's magic is like an easier flow for her to manage, whereas Terran's is like a big floodgate.
Which is interesting.
Okay, so again, runes were banned in Navarre during the unification, but flyers at Cliffsbane Academy and Peromiel were taught the art of like tempering runes, how to make runes. And it actually allows them to help compete against dragon signet users because you can create runes to counteract a person's signet, like we just said with Zayden and the dagger that he made for Violet. Also, runes are a perfect example of what Liam's mom did when she made the relic. The runes on the stones that all of the kids, the marked ones, carried in their pocket when their parents were executed by General Melgrin's dragon. So that basically concludes all of the major magical elements, the magic system for the Imperium series. And Kim, can you take us to the next section?
I would love to. Okay, we are going to be moving on to the main enemy in the series, Venon. So let's break this down. We are still running on mostly myth and what Violet has pieced together using her Book of Fables and some new info in Iron Flame. We think and desperately hope that we learn a lot more about the Venon dynamic and power structure in the coming books, especially since our sweet precious Zayden is now one of them, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yikes. Okay, so a reminder, like Anna has mentioned, that most people in Navarre are unaware of Venon and Wyverns due to government censorship. And those that are familiar with the stories believe them to be just that, stories, fairy tales, fables. Speaking of fables, the infamous book, The Fables of the Baron. This is a book of folklore that Papa Sorengale used to read to Violet, and she grew up believing it was just stories. But obviously we know it is the truth. And there's a very, very interesting story about three brothers. And one brother bonded with dragons, another with griffins, and the third became jealous and drew magic directly from the source, losing his soul and waging war on the others. And of course, as we've mentioned, magic needs balance. So not using a magical creature to channel and instead stealing from the earth means you have to give up something, your soul, your humanity. And therefore drawing from the source corrupts you. And this third brother became corrupted. And we talk more about this story specifically and a theory that I have about it.
Yes. Oh my gosh, guys, you have to go listen to this theory in our first Onyx Storm Theories episode. It is so great on the Fables of the Barons. I loved it.
Christina and I recorded it. It's our Onyx Storm Theories part one episode. It is out now. It is so interesting. And you guys, when you hear this theory and the wording that is used specifically, you are going to freak out. But not a theories episode. So yeah. We know that the Venon are blamed for the lack of life in the Barrens and they are presumed to reside there. And Violet has a dream and it reveals that at least one Venon, the Sage, is centuries old.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Interesting. Hmm. So let's move on to wyverns, which are the Venon's answer to not having their own magical creatures to fly. So they just created them. They are not natural born creatures of this world, which is frankly terrifying. They created the wyverns by placing complex runes on onyx stones.
Oh, fancy that. Onyx.
And these stones can actually be found in the bellies of wyverns. Violet and the crew basically like tear them open to like test this theory, and they find an onyx stone that has runes on it, and they know that that's how the Venon created them. They also share a collective mind with their wyvern. So anything a wyvern sees, the Venon sees. And they are tied to their host Venon. So if a Venon dies, all of the wyverns that the Venon created also die, which is really convenient Venon math. So if a Venon creates 50 wyverns and you kill that one Venon, then all 50 of the wyverns die. So
it's very convenient Venon math.
We love to see it.
We love it.
So let's talk about channeling, which is what the Venon do from the source. So you have to think of it as an addiction. Once you pull from the source, it becomes increasingly hard to ignore the pull to do so again. And this is what we are all very worried about with Zayden. And what Jack tells him at the end of Iron Flame in Zayden's POV. We also know that once you do pull from the source, the veins in your eyes and temples become red. And the more often you pull from the source, the more red they become. Yikes.
Yeah.
So let's quickly run through the hierarchy of the Venon as we know it going into Onyx Storm. So the lowest level is an initiate. This is what Zayden currently is going into Onyx Storm. Their eyes may have reddish rings depending on how often they drain others or pull from the source. The second level is Asim. Their eyes basically fluctuate in varying degrees of red, and their veins distend past their eyes when riled but are not spider-webbed like a sage's, for example. Now, speaking of sages, these Venon are responsible for the initiate Venon. So think of them as like professors. They are teaching the initiate Venon all the ways of...
to be Venon.
To be evil Venon.
Yeah.
Their eyes are permanently red and their veins are perpetually distended toward their temples, expanding with age. Now, the last level is called Maven, and this is equivalent to generals in Venon hierarchy. No Maven has ever been captured or studied. However, we think that General Darrymore from the Great War could be the Maven slash general who is searching for Violet. We absolutely do not think he's dead.
Nope.
And again, we talk about this in our Onyx Storm Theories Part 1. We know that he was actually held responsible for draining the land that is now called the Barrens. And what do Venon do? Drain the land?
Drain.
Okay. But let's talk about the Venon and wards, because for a long time it was believed that the Venon could not draw power from the source within the ward's reach, which explains why Nevar has been supposedly free of Venon attacks for 600 years. However, Jack confirms that it is possible to turn Venon within the wards. Why? Because he did. And that actually the wards do not block all power, and the Venon can still channel enough to survive, which is confusing if you think about it for too long.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just am like, why didn't the Venon just come in then and attack whenever they could?
Right. So Venon can control their dragons and survive even if their bonded dragon dies. We know this because Jack kills Bade at the end of Iron Flame, and he unfortunately, very unfortunately, survives.
Yes.
So let's talk about powers. So the Venon use a staff or their hands to channel magic, often appearing surrounded by blue flames.
Interesting.
So they have a whole host of powers. They have enhanced senses, because it's said in one of the epigraphs that the Venon responsible for killing the last king, King Grethwild, seemed to have very enhanced eyesight, and they were able to see within even the darkest of shadows. They can also wield fire, project pain, manipulate gravity, create shields, destruct and disintegrate things like Violet's conduit at the end of Iron Flame, you know, cause large-scale destruction. And we know that they create a dead zone when channeling. So if a person is in that vicinity, they will also shrivel up like the land and die.
Yes.
So their abilities, we know that they can quickly adapt to their opponent's fighting style, which is really unfortunate, and that they are impervious to dragon fire, However, we believe that Andarna and possibly the seventh breed of dragon may be the exception to this rule because the ASIM level venom that Andarna attacks at the end of Iron Flame seems to burn from her fire.
Yes. Smoking head.
Smoking head. Yes, it was decapitated, but why was the head smoking? Okay.
I breathe fire.
What? Like it's hard. So like Anna mentioned, we know that Venom can be killed with alloy weapons or pure power, like Violet's Lightning.
Yes.
So there are a couple things that don't kill Venom but weaken them. The only thing I think is the most important that might come up in Onyx Storm is the serum.
Yeah.
We know that Bisqueyeth uses a serum to block Venom from channeling power from the source. This serum is also what's used on Violet in Iron Flame when Varish is torturing her. And it's what denies her access to Taryn, Andarna, and Zayden. And she was completely cut off from her magic. Now, this is also why Rebecca Yarros has stated in interviews that Violet seeing Liam was not a reflection of her second signet. It was a trauma response.
Yes.
Okay. So let's just get that settled right now. And we also, I know this isn't a theories episode, but we theorize that Zayden might take this serum when inevitably him and Violet have to travel outside the wards to seek allies.
Yeah, which, oof, that's going to be hard because then
yeah.
He can't access his shadows and he's not a shadow daddy if he can't have his shadows.
Yeah, what's a shadow daddy without his shadows?
Right? Okay, so the gods and goddesses. Mm-hmm. We feel like we need to just mention these because a lot of people have theorized that the gods could end up becoming characters themselves in the coming books. So in case you need a refresher, here are the four ones that are mentioned. We have Amari, she is the queen of gods. Malik, he's the god of death. I feel like that's the one that gets talked about the most. Dun, goddess of war. And Zinal, who is the god of luck. They are so far just mentioned and prayed to or, you know, used in an expellative type of fashion. But people do think that they might end up becoming a thing, especially because there's all the talk about having to burn a person's belongings after they die or you risk Malik's wrath or whatever. We actually don't know what happens, but obviously Liam's stuff was not burned. Some of Papa Sorengale's stuff was not burned. Brennan's stuff was not burned, but Brennan's not dead.
Well, but everybody thought he was dead, though.
But everyone thought he was.
So we are going to go to the ending of Iron Flame. Now, we're going to bypass a lot of this stuff because you guys don't need to hear us recount an entire battle. But long story short, Violet figures out that the Venom are planning to attack Bisqueyeth because if the Venom can successfully destroy the Wardstone, that they will be unstoppable and able to possibly take over Navarre. But when she arrives at Bisqueyeth, she's too late because Just Jack is, surprise!
Surprise!
Venom. He's Venom. And he beats them to the tower where the Wardstone is located. Again, long story short, basically because Jack is Venom and still bonded to his dragon, he has also corrupted his dragon Bade. And he uses Bade's corrupted fire to destroy the Bisqueyeth Wardstone. And he then kills his dragon, which was shockingly really upsetting to read.
Yeah, it was hard to read because of the way he does it is so gruesome. And it's clear that she's become corrupted. Like his venomism somehow tainted the bond. Mm-hmm. Her fire changes. Her eyes are different.
Yeah.
And like she had no choice. Like I wonder if he was able to control her somehow.
I'm sure. Maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yes. So he kills Bade, but surprise, he can survive because he's Venom.
Yes.
Jack will not die. And it's infuriating. Side note, we also find out that Nolan has been trying to cure Jack of his venomism all year, which obviously didn't work. So fantastic job, Nolan. Way to accomplish nothing. And Violet also notes that she actually thinks Jack turned Venom in Fourth Wing before she, quote unquote, killed him in book one because she remembers him having red rimmed eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Yep. Fascinating. But back to the plot. So Violet convinces everyone to fight alongside her, including her mother and a lot of Navarre leadership. And together they work to defend Bisqueyeth from the oncoming Venom attack. Again, we're summarizing here. We're just doing what you need to know. So there's a huge, huge battle where they're basically playing zone-on-zone defense. Shit is not going well at all, especially for Sawyer, who loses a leg.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not dead. So,
but he's not dead.
Could be worse. Could be worse.
Could be a lot worse.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Brennan, who, if you guys have forgotten, is like a highly skilled mender, is trying to mend the broken wardstone that Jack just broke. Now, before we move on, Anna is going to walk us through some key points about the journals and the creation of the wardstone.
Okay, yes. So I want to rewind a second to two very important artifacts, Lyra and Warwick's journals. One of the big plot points in Iron Flame is that the Revolution, like Zayden and everyone in Aredia, are trying to raise a ward so that Aredia and the surrounding areas are protected from Venon. Remember, we touched upon that earlier in the episode. That's why they want the Luminary from Viscount Tacaris. Now, Warwick's journal is pivotal in this because he describes how to properly create and raise the wards. The quote from the diary is, "The breath of life of the Sixth and the One combined and set the stones ablaze." Okay, so he mentions six, meaning referring to dragons.
Yes.
So now there are only six known breeds of dragons. So initially everyone believes that means that they must have a dragon from each breed to help illuminate slash set fire to the wardstone. Wrong. Mm-hmm. Turns out Warwick was a greedy little man who for selfish reasons thought that only Navarre should hold the power of being able to create wards. So he purposely left out a very important fact. Enter Lyra's journal. Because who runs the world?
Girls.
She states in her journal, "The breath of life of the seven combined," and then continues on.
Oh, God.
There's a secret seventh breed of dragon. Oh. Buckle up. This is where shit gets wild.
Yep.
Because, of course, everyone is freaking out. We don't have a special seventh breed to help raise the ward. Okay? But wait, we do. Enter Goldie.
Yay!
A.K.A. Amdarna, a.k.a. the only known member of this special seventh breed.
Yep.
So this is the quote. She says, Amdarna, "I waited 650 years to hatch. Waited until your 18th summer when I heard our elders talk of the weakling daughter of their general, the girl forecasted to become the head of the scribes, and I knew you would have the mind of a scribe and the heart of a writer, who would be mine. You are as unique as I am." Then Violet asks Indarna if she will help lend her fire to, like, raise the wards. And Indarna says, "It was why I was left behind. At least from what I remember, it has been centuries." If you guys don't remember, Indarna literally means second honor, which could have double meaning, but she is also probably the only second dragon to help raise the wards since they were first raised centuries ago. I mean, she's been waiting 650 years in an egg, so yeah. Obviously there's a lot more going on than just her raising the wards.
Yes.
But we deep dive into that a lot more in our theories episode, so if you want to hear more on Amdarna, feel free to check those out. But yes. Anyways, back to the wardstone. Amdarna and the other six dragons all agree to use their fire to help raise the wardstones at Piscaeth, and all that's needed is just basically a fuck ton of magical energy.
Yeah.
In addition to their dragon fire.
Right.
Also important to note that once a dragon helps raise a ward, that specific dragon can never use their fire again to raise a ward. That's why Tarn can't help raise the wardstone at Biscayeth, because he used his fire at Aredia.
Yes.
That's why Violet approaches General Melgrin's dragon at the end in the battle, and she goes up. You never approach another rider's dragon and talk to them.
No.
Tarn about loses his fucking mind, and she's like, "So listen, I need your help." And Tarn's like, "You do not speak to other dragons."
Yeah, what are you doing, Silver One?
But he's the only other black dragon, right. And they can't use Tarn.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. I forgot about that.
Very interesting. So that's why it's really important. Like, Andarna's,
yes.
That's why she's there. If it didn't work, well, we're fucking out of seventh breed.
And truly, right.
Unless we venture to the Isle Kingdoms, and maybe.
Maybe.
Who knows? Okay, so back again to the wardstones. The six dragons all agree to use their fire to help raise the wardstone of Piscaeth. And like I said, all they need is more magical energy. Violet is willing to sacrifice herself to do this. Basic, you know, give everything over.
Yeah.
And just as she is nearing burnout, her mother shows up and sacrifices herself instead. And y'all, this moment, I don't know why it hit us so hard, especially because it was such a quick redemption moment.
Yeah.
But it really did hit us.
Oh, I was sobbing. There's actually a video of me on our Patreon. If you go search Iron Flame, I think.
Oh, yes.
There's a video of me reading this death scene with Lilith, and I was sobbing so hard. It was actually insane. I don't know why it hit so hard, because I disliked Lilith throughout the whole series.
I think it's just the mother's love and the epigraph.
Oh, where she's like, "You know better.
I die, it'll be in the, like, to save our children."
To save our children.
Yeah. And she says it to her husband.
And I'm really hoping that for Violet's sake and Mira and Brennan, I guess, that we learn more about Lilith and maybe her true intentions and what she was doing that they didn't know about.
Yes.
Because I really want that for them. I want to see that Lilith was playing a long game and was not on the wrong side.
And listeners, you could play a drinking game with how many times we said this is not a theories episode.
Don't. You'd be wasted.
Don't. Don't do it. But I agree with you, Kim. I really think that Violet, Mira, and Brennan deserve that. And we theorize Papa Sorengale was killed for his research, and she's doing everything in her power to protect her children, and she's keeping secrets, and they die with her. but hopefully there's journals.
I think we are getting journals.
We are. I mean, those epigraphs, man, I love them.
I love them.
Okay, so anyways, so like we said, Lilith ends up sacrificing herself with the help of Sloane, who is Liam's little sister, if you guys don't remember. And Sloane's signet is a siphon. She's able to basically help speed up the process of imbuing the Wardstone with power because she can help act as like a conduit. It's basically like high-speed internet.
Yeah.
She's able to like get yes. in there really fast.
Exactly, yeah. exactly.
So she drains basically Lilith of all of her life's force. Mm-hmm. And the quote while Lilith is dying is, "There's nothing I wouldn't do to keep you safe. Do you understand? Everything was to get you to this moment when you'd be strong enough." She falls to her knees but doesn't let go of Sloane. "You're everything we dreamed you would be," Mom says quietly.
That line.
And again, it's beautiful, but I feel like there's double meaning.
Of course.
Of course.
Has to be.
Okay, so anyways, oh no, Lilith's dead. It's sad. It sucks. We're all devastated.
Yeah.
But Violet also needs to check in with the group chat because Zayden is off fighting Avenin, and oh no, he's almost dying. So she freaks out. She turns to Tear and he takes her to Zayden. She arrives. Zayden is alive, thank God. The Venin is nowhere to be seen. Zayden says that he killed the Venin, but oh, plot twist. Zayden turns around. We see his eyes. They're red-rimmed. Zayden pulled from the source. Zayden is Venin.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yep.
And it is bombshell dropped on the entire fandom.
100%.
So Kim, the very last chapter of Iron Flame is from Zayden's POV. Will you take us through that?
Absolutely. I would love to. So a few very key points here about the big reveal that Zayden has become Venin in the final chapter. Now, we learn from Zayden's POV that the Venin he was fighting calls himself a general, aka a Maven level Venin. And if you all remember from our Venin 101 section earlier in this episode, Mavens are historically nearly impossible to kill, and there's really not much known about them. So while Zayden says he killed the Venin, did he really?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he got what he wanted, which was for Zayden to turn Venin.
Exactly. So Zayden infers that this Venin is the one from his nightmares. He's referencing how this Venin is matching him block for block, quote, "just like my fucking nightmares." Now, the entirety of Iron Flame, aside from this chapter, is from Violet's POV, and she, we know, has been having nightmares about a certain Venin. And these don't seem like normal nightmares, nor do we think that they are. We think that this Venin is 100% somehow able to communicate with Violet in her dreams. Now, what's interesting in Zayden's POV is that we find out that he is also having these similar nightmares. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see if this is going to be answered in Onyx Storm.
I am curious, too.
Yes. So we know that Zayden wakes up beside Violet, which is a good thing. It means that, you know, even after he reveals himself to be Venin, she loves him enough to not push him away. She's curled up next to him in bed and he whispers, "I love you." And then he gets up and he goes to the dungeons to visit our least favorite cockroach, Jack fucking Barlow. And he asks Jack about a venin cure, to which Jack says, "Cures are for diseases. What we have is power. And that, dear Ryerson, isn't curable. It's inevitable."
Yeah, I don't love that.
And that, listeners, is the end of Iron Flame and where we have left our heroes heading into Onyx Storm.
Such a joy of an ending.
Joyful.
What a note.
Hopeful, one might say. Yeah, needless to say, we are really, really excited, anxious, nervous, all the emotions for what's to come in Onyx Storm.
Oh my gosh, what do we have? Like
2 weeks, I think.
2 weeks from today. Today's, we're recording this on a Tuesday. Yeah, it's 2 weeks.
Right?
Oh my God, 2 weeks.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh my God, I'm like sweating.
I know. I know. And then we go to New York to see Rebecca Yarros. It's just going to be so fun.
I cannot wait.
Yeah. So we aren't entirely sure what the next episode after. It's going to be something Onyx Storm related. We might try to do like a wrap up of the Rebecca Yarros event while we're all three together in New York. But if not, then of course you will definitely see us back with Onyx Storm episodes.
Full episode deep dives.
Oh my God, we are so excited. We are so excited.
Wait.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.